Selden, how long have we known each other?
Oh my God, not even a year. And it feels like, well, do you want to know the soul? Like the soul number? The soul number is like, I just got the number thousands. Like we may have known each other in a lifetime, like thousands of years ago. But in this lifetime, it's not even been a year, which is crazy because.
And after a thousand lifetimes, Selden still decided to play hard to get when we met in this lifetime.
And hard to get, you're married.
Was like, hey, I'm here. I know you. I know, talk to me. And you're like, no.
Oh, really? Oh, that's so interesting. I didn't even know that I did that.
Well, what we're talking
That
about is
certainly wasn't intentional.
I know, I'm kidding. Well, what we're talking about is we met through Irene and the SPT group, and we start getting on these like preliminary calls. And I'm like, who's this girl? She looks so familiar. And I'm like, put the book on my screen. And I'm like, where do I
Same.
know her from?
Same. That has been happening to me a lot lately. So when I first thought that about you is when you did your interview with Irene and I saw you and I was like, oh, I know him. I know him. I know him from my party days, I think. And I kept like searching my memory bank to just be like, and then I was like, wait, he is so much younger than me. Like when I was in my party days, you were like,
In high school or something.
not even, not even.
Okay.
You
So
were like,
you're
you were like
8 or
12.
9 years older than me, right? No, you're 8 or 9 years older than me,
Thought
math.
I was 10.
It's close to 10, but it's not. I know that.
How old are you?
39. I had to think about
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay,
I'm
so
25 going on 40.
so 8 years old. 8 years older than you. So yeah. Anyway, then I was like, so wait, I don't know him from that. I'm like, oh shit, this is some past life stuff.
Well, I said that to you when you were walking across the room because I was like, all right, I'm sick of playing easy stuff here. And I was like, hey, I think I know you, right? And you're like, yeah, like whatever, dude. And I was like, not from another lifetime. And you were like deer in the headlights. And then you sat down. I was like, okay, here we go.
Well, I was like, oh, I didn't know that you would roll like that. Like, I didn't, I was like, oh, he's down. Okay. 'Cause I was just like, I'm not sure. It's really interesting that you say that, though. I'm surprised we're going here, but let's just do it. You're not the first person that's told me that I'm like a little bit standoffish at first in person, which is really interesting. 'Cause like now that I know my human design, I'm a 5'1", there is like, and it's obviously something that I'm working on in my own nervous system, my relational patterns and things like
There's
that.
boundaries, healthy boundaries too.
There's healthy boundaries, but there's also some fear. There's also some fear around getting, or there always has been around getting close to people, or fear of like what they think of me, or and I think it comes off like I don't like know necessarily that I'm doing it, but I'm trying to be in my own energy, but I think that's really hard for me with when I'm like with people and in groups because my energy tends to get really, really big. And even if like I'm not the kind of person that can walk into a room and just hide for some reason. Like people have
And
to
just what?
notice, like hide.
Hide, yeah.
Like some people always seem to notice me or like, you know, not like in a cocky way or anything, but like it just seems that like people always, you know. So I think that I don't know that about. I've never really known that about myself. So I think I've always just tried to be like incognito, and then it comes off as like standoffish sometimes. So that's interesting.
I get that. And you taught me about the human design stuff, and that really resonated for me. And mine is like, wait for things to come to me. And man, that shows up in my healing journey so much. But like, I think when I go with the invitation instead of waiting for someone to come to me, then I can feel like very aggressive, abrasive too much, and like come off as like, whoa. But if it's like if somebody introduces me, it's so much more natural that we kind of go from there.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also this process for me of like unlearning that fawn of like having to be the one who's social and nice and talking to everybody. Like that social butterfly was part of my identity for so long. And as I've become regulated, I'm like, that's first of all, it's It's actually a lot of energy. It requires a lot of energy for us to just, because we're basically fawning to a whole group of people, right?
Yeah.
Trying to get them to like us, trying to be frizzled.
It's perfection.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like what you just said. I realized this the other day. It's like, I feel like in relationship, especially, like I'm responsible for everything. Not like, hey, I'm going to take this first step, put this thing out there and trust that the universe is, or the person is going to respond. It's like, oh no, I've got to handle all this stuff. And yeah,
control, process, they feel
your energy. Yeah. It's been so stressful and fatiguing.
Totally.
And it's like, it's so much more authentic and relaxing to just be instead of like,
yeah,
performing for love and trying to control everything to feel safe.
Because
underneath it's just, there's not safety and we're working on that.
Exactly. Yeah. And
it wasn't safety and we're building it.
Exactly. I think as that dissolves, though, you know, I wonder if the pendulum just kind of swings like back to that standoffish thing. It's like, you know, trying not to do that swings you a little bit into the other direction of maybe being standoffish until you kind of come back into balance, which I hope is happening now. But
oh, yeah, no, I see it. I see it in you. Even like you talked in like 2 weeks or something like that. It feels like a year again. And it's like so much I've seen you develop and we're the same way. Like we're the same in our, we're very similar and very different.
Yeah.
100%. What we're going to talk about today, but it's like we go through it a while ago and this is probably still the same. I could always go to you and be like, hey, I'm going through this thing. And you're like, oh yeah. Like I went through that then and then this, but also I go like really freaking fast. I think both of them.
Dude, so fucking fast. Holy shit. Like you've been like a volcano that's erupted. Literally. It's like your volcano erupted like around the descent. Man, I'm getting some like, I'm all getting like all these. I love, love it when I'm with the open person because it's just the information is coming. But like around November, December, it was like this eruption, right? And through February. And then it's like that eruption just started to kind of settle. Mm-hmm. And now there's like these little bit bursts, but that big, like the boulder, right? The boulder.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a big piece of it. But then it was like that boulder almost unlocked so much right after that for you, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the one, what you're talking about, I believe, is where like realizing how I made myself small and would avoid confrontation to keep the peace. And I'm like holding in parts of me. And just, you know, that's control. And for me, I like to be just in the moment and 100% myself. And I feel like I've got to dance around and walk on eggshells to stay in connection with someone or something. Like it just became more and more evident that that's what was going on. And every time I would do that, I would just shut down. And it was kind of in line with what was going on energetically as well, which you guys taught me that a lot about that, like the horoscope and the hemodynamics and how all that goes. But yeah, it is like, that's kind of how it is for me. It's like these big, but wide open bursts and then chilling and then boom.
It's been quite like a joy to witness.
Oh yeah, and thanks for being dad, man. Like so much along with, and been working on safety and uncertainty and so many times, like having someone that's been a couple steps ahead of you in the journey to say like, what the fuck is going on? And you're like, oh yeah, yeah, that's par for the course, baby.
Totally. Yeah. Because we don't know. And you don't know when you get into this work. Just like that term sneaky powerful has been coming up for me again in the last couple of days. I heard Irene say it on a podcast, Here for the Truth. And
nice.
I'm like, man, it's really like, sorry. Sorry, Rose. I know. Hold on a second. Sorry about that. Someone tried to call me. I have to turn my phone off.
Oh, I need to do that too.
Sorry about that.
You're good. This is the first episode. I think this is my first episode that I've done. So like, yeah, I'm not really editing things and there's going to be some bleeps.
I know. Sorry, everyone.
Authenticity.
Like real life shit happening right now. Good. Hold on. Yeah. Okay, got it. We're on do not disturb now. Sorry about that. I can't remember what I was saying now. What was I saying?
I don't know. We're just talking about how we're similar and, you know, just some of the stuff that we've been through this year. And it was like a lot, you know, big waves and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. So like when we start doing this work and we start releasing some of those big things, like a lot happens after, like we don't really know what to expect. That's why like it's really important, I think, to have have a practitioner that you're working with. But for us, we're so fortunate that we had that group, the SPT group, and had each other, you know, to just, because everybody's a little bit different stages in their process and stuff. And we can say, like, if to me, it was so, just so supportive to hear, like, oh, that's normal for that to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, it's normal for you to be really activated. Like when I learned, oh, the process of releasing freeze from the system is that the activation has to come out. So like, you know, when that
and you get excited about that. Like now.
I get excited about it now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, let's
go, dude.
Yeah, it's totally. But yeah. Remember when it used to scare us so much?
So bad.
Ew, terrified of the symptoms.
I got something for you. I just realized, and tell me if I'm right, that like, because when we're in class and Irina would say, you know, something's coming up. Can you be with it? I think that is how we take it to completion, right? Is literally just sitting and observing and saying, hey, I'm not going to turn away. I'm not going to. You know, get this other thing. I'm not going to avoid you. I'm not going to numb you. I'm just going to sit here and watch you and be like, this is fucking awesome. I'm going to cheer you on. And that feels like that's something I've been able to do more. And it feels like you do go up, boom. And then you hit this thing and it's like, I just forget what I was doing because now it's
right
now. Does that make sense?
I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, that I think is the shift. That I think is like the, one of the biggest shifts because in that, at least in the beginning, when we sit with that activation and what's happening, we are always faced with the fear of whatever it was that happened to us when that thing got trapped.
Yeah.
Like, and then on top of that, the societal programming that we have around.
Put a Band-Aid on it.
Or, well, around fearing symptoms, right?
Well, like, how you would say
allopathic medicine, I mean, it's bad to have a symptom. Like, the. Right. Body's doing something wrong. Oh. Like, you know, where's this going? Well, you could have a heart defect or what, you know, all the things that the fear is just like, that's like global fear of sensation and symptom, right? Yeah, global high activation. And so when we're able to like pause and take space and just feel what's happening without trying to fix it or change it, we are really processing through a ton of fear around the symptom in that moment. You know, making myself actually just be here. And where is that fear? Because there's like the fear's there and then there's the activation. So it's always coupled in there, you know, together. And
that's what I've been working on a lot recently through this brain retraining stuff. And it's so funny because I feel like there's a war that I'm on the side of somatic between
total
and bottom up, right? And I would say I'm gonna go to bottom up, but in this scenario, and Lena, someone, shout out to Lena, really helped me with this, but I was doing it without knowing that's what brain retraining was. And it's basically what we're talking about. It's recognizing the symptoms, feel, and you pair them together is the way I do it. Recognize that it's in your system. Figure out where is it in my body? What's it feel like? What's it saying? Blah, 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 blah. And then notice the action towards fixing. And it's like, that's where that's the brain stuff. You go, oh, I know that this is urgent, that I want to be afraid of this fear, of this thought that I'm having, or this sensation in my body. I'm going to run to fix it. So instead of doing that, I'm going to notice the urgency. I'm going to sit with that part. I'm going to talk really nice to it. And I'm going to go back to what I was doing. Maybe do some soothing or something like that. And within, for someone like me who had so much fatigue, we were talking about this yesterday. I had so much fatigue. And I think for me, it's less about, Mitch, you're doing too much. It's your thinking there's danger too much.
Exactly.
But I had to interrupt that process. And for those that are listening, these are a lot of the guys that I work with. They got so much fatigue, a bunch of activation underneath it. And it's like, we want to, we're the biohackers, we're the fixers, we're the athletes, you know, and sometimes it's better to just notice the thought and go back to what you're doing. I'd say within 1 week, my fatigue dropped by 50%.
That's awesome.
Same thing with Lena. She
yeah.
I think she had a month of it and she's doing a lot better too.
Yeah. Because of that shift. Because of-
yeah. And it's like, I want to debate like which way is better, up or down. But it's like, nah, they actually work.
They're both great. But the thing that I will say, at least this was the truth for me, I couldn't do any kind of mindset stuff until I had capacity.
Well, that's exactly right. I agree with that.
You know, because when you're in your rumination and your anxiousness and your worry and your dysregulation to the level that you and I had, there's no trying to retraining your brain, and like even hypnotherapy, it's actually almost like quite frustrating because when you can't do it,
yes,
it's not possible until you have at least a layer or a few layers of safety and capacity already there. Like yeah. it really is quite difficult, and people make it sound easy. Just mindset. And I remember being like, I am so, like, I would get angry. So much anger would come up around that because I'd be like, it's not that easy for me. Like, I have no control. There's no control, like, for lack of a better word.
There's no safety.
There's no
safety. It's never been safety in the systems ever.
It's in survival, and that amygdala is going crazy. It's like, dude, you can't try to control that. It doesn't want it. It needs to have that safety built there. And then that somatic work obviously does all those things and we get more embodied and have that capacity. And then it's like all of a sudden that mindset stuff is like, it's pretty easy for me now. I mean, I don't say easy because none of this work is like easy per se, but not a struggle, you know, it's not a struggle. I'm just like, oh, that's a part coming up. That's interesting. Wow. Yes. That need right now, you know, and that fear, that worry and fear around like, oh, what does this mean? And the shame around like, why can't I? Because that was what it was like in any kind of mindset work that I did before this work was like the shame around why I couldn't do it because it's easy for everybody. So I would just shame myself.
Yeah. Like, well, is control and that is safety is if I shame myself, well, then the other people don't have to do it. And what you're talking about with the capacity is so interesting. Like, as you're describing that, I couldn't have done that a year ago, right? Like, I don't know what safety is. How could I make this stop? But what happens is, and this happened for me in a one-on-one session, and this demonstrates what we're talking about the building capacity. So maybe when you will know it's time or, you know, what that looks like, it's like I would feel a part coming up. But prior to that, it felt like this is me. This is my identity. This is my activation or my anxiety. And then what happened is it came up and I was going into it and I went, boom. And it's like I was holding it now. And I'm like fearing for this part. And I'm going like, but and it was certainly
it's outside of you now.
It was psychedelic because the only way I had to grab it, it was like quantum psychedelic because I am really crying for the grief that this thing is holding. I'm feeling the activation and I'm soothing it and I'm laughing at the same time because I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Because what happened, like, I'm just getting so many amazing images right now. What happened was that part of you detached itself from your identity, right? And so you grieved. That's a piece of you that has tried so hard to keep you safe for so long. So you grieved. You had to say goodbye to that part. And that is like, it's like saying goodbye to a relationship. I mean,
does it really go anywhere though? Is it going somewhere? Or is it just like, uncoupling the identity of it. Like, I feel like...
What happens is alchemy, right? What happens is that piece transforms into what part of the more embodied... Because what happened was you just allowed space for more authenticity and more embodiment to occur within you. And so that's the transformation. That energy is... Yeah, and energy is never created or destroyed, right? So that energy, that old stuff moved out. And then this like the oldest, really the purest version of you, a part of that light was able to come through, right? So
our adult self coming online, because it feels more
exactly.
It doesn't feel like and that's what happens. It's like now that we have capacity, these things that we're talking about, these sensations, these emotions, they're coming up, and instead of being like, oh my god, we go, oh my god, we move towards it instead of moving away from it. Because that's one thing I was asking my clients. I'm like, they're like, hey, this part is coming up. I'm like, what's your immediate reaction? Slow that down. And are you like going, fuck? Or are you being like, no? Or are you going like, yes? And it happens like, first you'll have the recoil and you notice that. The next time you may recoil and go into it. And another time it's going to come up and you're going to go, oh, you're going to be a big hug. And that's
just like, hey, what's going on?
Well, here's another one too. Like, treat it like it's a little kid that's trying to like scare you.
It is.
It's running in the room and it's not like, it's going, oh my, rawr, like that, right? And you go, oh my God, you scared me. So this.
Right. That's like a new one.
Yeah. Hey.
What do you got to say?
Yeah, you are welcome here. And I'm not anywhere.
And the energy is so sweet, you know, usually like it's interesting because when people do inner child work before they like have the capacity and safety, there's a lot around. Like I have clients and even friends who've told me like whenever I connect with my inner child, I'm like angry or annoyed. I'm like annoyed with them. And I'm like, oh, man. OK, cool. Yeah, let's do some more embodiment work. Keep building capacity. It's OK. Yeah. And then eventually that's going to shift. And when that shifts into that compassion, like when I picture my inner child, man, I used to have like just uncontrollable tears around it. Just so much emotion. And now I'm like, oh, she's so sweet. You know, like she just wants to be loved and she's still scared. And all these things are still, they're still there, yeah. You know, but it does feel like it's not driving the bus for me anymore.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great way of saying that. And
I'm the front seat.
You remember me, my stuff with the, once we can start to have compassion for those parts that we hated, we start to see that for other people. And it's like, I'm cheering on the underdog now. I'm cheering on, you know, people that used to trigger me because of their symptoms or what they got going on. You can see that little kid in them and you're like, oh, I get it, dude. And it's like, this isn't about me and you're not trying to be mean to me. Like, you're in your stuff.
Totally. Do you see your parents that way now?
Yeah, that's exactly what that's coming from, where we have a conversation where I'm like, okay, I had no contact with my parents for a year. I reached out to my mom like yesterday, right? For the first time in a long time. And it's because I realized the more I did this inner child work, the more I realized I could not judge myself. And if I'm judging myself or I'm judging other people, I might as well be, for being in their trauma stuff, for not being perfect, that I might as well be doing that to me, and I'm not willing to do that anymore. And so it softens that.
Because
actually, whenever we're doing this, I mean, it's the four fingers, it's projecting what we're really feeling about ourselves. And you've been able to this work, the more you see that, and you go to do that, and you're like, oh, shit, like.
And that happens simultaneously, you know? That's why it's like when we focus on just our own healing work, we do end up very soon. Once that shift happens where we have compassion for ourselves, that starts to ripple out into having compassion for other people. You know, it definitely happens.
Because that was you and insights. How could we? That's what I realized is like, I would watch people even in the group getting emotional or even watching myself get emotional. And I just feel so uncomfortable. And now that's not, but nobody makes us.
Totally.
I mean, you know, we feel what's unprocessed in us, And so I just realized, like, oh, like, the more compassion I can have for myself and for other people, the more I can show up and help more people and help myself and have more compassion. And it, you know, this work is like, it's like 5D healing. It's always like, I love that I'm in the space now and practicing all the time, because the clients I work with is me helping me.
Exactly.
It's me. And I had to learn not to laugh when they told me stuff. Because I'm like, I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because I'm like, yeah, me too. Like, that, I get it. Like,
you're like, I'm speaking my language, right? Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, good start. Good start. So do we want to pivot and talk about, like, the, I'll let you take it from here. How about that? With the free stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So one thing that I, like, I've been noticing this for a while, but I've, like, what I'm noticing more now is that nobody really says it. Like, we're all kind of dancing around it. And what I notice in, like, just other social media people that I follow that are doing, you know, nervous system stuff is, like, everybody's posting about, people post about different behaviors, I think, because it captures the thing. You know, captures the attention.
People pleasing and stuff like that.
But what I don't hear people talking about, and it's literally probably the most significant part of this, is that we demonize the freeze so much, right? Because that's what leads to us being non-functional. And the societal programming around being non-functional is that it's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you have to be functioning. You have to be producing. I mean, this is part of this big shift into this matriarchal paradigm that we're stepping into, this more feminine paradigm that we're stepping into. But what is most important, the shutdown is not the thing. Like, that's more protection. It's the activation that's there. That's underneath that didn't get to get mobilized. And then,
when we just pause right there with, like, activation underneath, it's built up so much that the system says, hey, I'm going to put a clamp on this.
Yes.
Because if I continue to spin at this rate, I'm going to get
back.
Yeah.
I mean, if shutdown's there, then death is being sensed, you know, in some capacity, right? Because death doesn't, I mean, freeze doesn't come on. I mean, it has to be too much, too fast, for too long.
Yeah, there you go.
For chronic freeze to, I don't want to say freeze, because freeze is technically what happens in the moment where there's a actual, like, life-threatening thing. But let's say chronic shutdown.
Chronic shutdown, yeah.
Chronic shutdown, like, doesn't happen or doesn't become chronic. And by the way, and this makes me feel sad again for my little inner child, but it has to be, that has to be happening for a long time before.
To go into collapse.
To go into chronic collapse and chronic shutdown and chronic symptoms, what we're talking about is, like, when that autoimmune and syndrome stuff really takes hold, that's gas and brake have been on for a long time. And that's when the chronic, like, shutdown stuff starts to happen, right?
So, you know, in that situation, if someone's coming to us and they're collapsed, we know there's likely a component of early childhood, early developmental trauma that's been simmering under the surface.
It doesn't have to be. There could have been some little things and then a big shock trauma. There could have been, right? There could have been a big car accident. There could have been one particular abusive thing that led to shutdown. But usually if one event does that much, like, quote unquote damage, for lack of a better word, there was already some stuff happening. I mean, we're in the Western world, so most of us are working through complex trauma.
Well, that could even be that, that ongoing threat could just be chronic stress and answering emails. And
well, so that's what I'm getting to. So, like, when we talk about just our daily habits and our daily patterns, people come to me like, how do I move freeze? How do I get out of shutdown? How do I move the fatigue? And as I start listening to their day, like, well, tell me what you did that, you know, for example, somebody might say, oh, I went into freeze. I went into shutdown. I couldn't move for 3 days. Okay. So what happened before that? What were you doing? oh, I felt amazing. I went on a 10-mile hike, and then I had this big, but I then I had this big fight with my boyfriend, but then I went to a sound bath, and then I'm like, you blew your system out. Like, that is so much, right? So we're dealing with people who already have a small amount of capacity. And what I think is the misconception is that when I have energy, I have to do everything I can. Yeah. When will that collapse happen again? And most of the time, 9 times out of 10, we can actually avoid that shutdown by just slowing down.
But there's been no interoception. There's no ability to say, oh, like what else? I think we were talking.
This might be too much.
Yeah. It's like yesterday, I was getting tired and I was telling myself, do I want to go like do a walk or something like that? And I was like, no, I think I really just need to like contain and feel my body for a minute. And it's like all I needed was that 20 minutes of sitting and pausing and do it, because then I started yawning. And so that's the thing, is if we can build this awareness, now we sense the need to pause, because, and we don't have that because likely we were constantly performing and overriding and abandoning ourselves to stay change someone else.
Yeah. The performing and the fawning and the overriding, you know,
it's conditioning.
It's conditioning, and it's, you know, but it's just so interesting. It's been really interesting for me to like notice and kind of unpack how much everyone's so focused on that shutdown. And it's like, dude, you will avoid the shutdown if you just shift a couple of things in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Time, you know, but yeah. There's no capacity. There's no safety. I mean, that's part of the dysregulation, but we don't treat the shutdown. You know, I mean, we do indirectly, but if we go to like, what's that other thing? What's that look like? You know, with me and my girlfriends recently, just the deeper layers of that fawn expression for women is just so heavy. So for a lot of women, it's like, oh, well, I don't really know what was happening. I don't really know what was happening. And as we get deeper in the conversation, oh, well, I saw my in-laws this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, really? So tell me about that. Well, it's always so uncomfortable for me. And I feel like I can't be myself. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then they say, oh, I had my shutdown happened the next day.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is...
You left yourself. You left yourself to the...
Yourself, and you overrode, but you overrode for an extended period of time. So just that awareness... Right? Like, okay, so what do we think is the max of the capacity that you might have in an interaction like that? 1 hour, 30 minutes? Do you need to not have contact with them for a period of time to see, to build, right? And then from there, like a lot happens, you know? A lot happens, because that's actually working with the freeze. Because the freeze makes us dissociated. It's the thing that makes us disconnected from that authenticity, from what's really happening. Mm-hmm. So when we go with that, that awareness is actually moving the freeze, you know, also.
Yeah.
Those little bits of freeze.
I say the same thing with men and myself and the guys that I work with, where you've got high-performing athletes, special operators in the military, and what they have done is they have blown themselves out by saying, you know, I can't cry, I can't rest, I can't do this. And you can't do that shit in war, so we understand.
Sure.
But it's recognizing these patterns that, and I would say there's likely a lot of the things that we're talking about, there's likely some early developmental trauma, there's likely conditioning that says, I can't stop, I can't cry, I gotta hold it in. And so then what happens is, we start to shut down. And so as men, we want to be the provider. We want to do. We want to be active if that's what we've done. And so we don't know how to rest, and we just shame ourselves and beat ourselves up. And what do? We try to fix it with drugs and alcohol or supplements, exactly. Or the healthy thing or working out. And it's like, it's just what you said. It's slowing the stuff way down so that we can see these patterns. And like we were talking about earlier, it's like, I don't know all the time that it's I've done too much, but it's I've left my body so much and abandoned my needs because I don't know how to listen. And my conditioning says I shouldn't do that.
Exactly.
I'm boxed in to this like this reminds me of what we were talking about earlier, walking on eggshells, making myself small. My world is getting so small because this is all I got, you know? And when we can start to express ourselves and the way that we want to and rest when we need to. And I mean, that's a journey and that's a lot.
It's a journey. I mean, look, this does take, again, this is why those basics are so important. This is why the foundation and the building safety, building capacity is so important, because we won't even have those awarenesses. We won't even be able to slow down, right? If we're really, really stuck in that survival. And so it's just these titrating these little pieces. I mean, the people that I see, my clients that can really make that shift quickly, they've been seeing me for a while. They have some capacity built up, right? And that's huge for them. But there are newer people that I bring the awareness to, and it's like, okay, this is going to take some time to shift. Like, don't expect this pattern to just shift tomorrow, right? Or even this week. It's like, just start to notice, right? Because you're going to overshoot this, and then you're going to undershoot it a million times before you really can get tuned into what, again, that somatic intuition, which is my favorite term. Like, until that really comes online, and that's really, really, it's fine. It's almost like it's precise, right? It's like it becomes really precise.
I like that you said building capacity as a foundation, because I think that's something. I was having a conversation with someone this morning who was reaching out to me, and they're like, hey, what do you know about EMDR? And like, have you done that? I've done it. I started with it. If I could go back and do it again, I would build capacity first. Not to say that it's not a solid modality. I think it really needs, I think any of this work, I think
anything
needs anything. Capacity. And what I mean by that is you got to be able to sit in the fire with your symptoms and know that they're not going to hurt you. Yeah. And that's going back to the conversation that we started with. And until then, you need to learn to feel your butt in the chair and be in your environment without, you know, being somewhere else. And
it's able to feel all the things that are coming up without shaming them or trying to push them away or getting, you know, like, you got to be able to just be with them and you know, feel them through to their completion or through that experience.
Yeah.
You know,
you come into this work with that survival energy. I'm going to fix it and I'm going to get it done now. And like, I see how EMDR can be like an exclamation of stuff, like looked at like that. Like, that's not how it works. This is a lifestyle, and you better. Yeah. It's like eating good food. And you, if you can just show up every week or every other week and do your work and rest and integrate and focus on other things.
Yeah.
You know, this a lot of times I got so burnt out because I was taking that survival energy into this and being like, am I going to fix it now? Am I going to fix it now? And if I didn't fix it, I'm going to shame myself and beat myself up. And it's like, nah, dude, it's just another week, another session, another day. And when you allow it and you quit trying to control it, then it kind of, boom, it can blow open. You can have those big moments, but you don't want to have those big moments all the time. You know, it's
right. Exactly.
Your system. That's what I learned recently. Your nervous system is your map. You don't have to control or figure it out. You just got to show up and observe and be with what is and what needs to come up. It's going to come up.
Yeah. 100%. I think the people that can do those modalities, like even plant medicine, you know, especially plant medicine, actually, that can do those modalities and actually, you know, not have a big setback or have a lot happen, right? And experience a lot. They already may have a better foundation, right? They may have had a little bit better attachment. They may have had, I mean, everybody's so different. But that's why it's like going into this work, building safety and building capacity is so important, because you don't know often. I mean, if you've got a syndrome and you know you've got shut down and you know you got autoimmune, that's a clear sign that you don't have a lot of capacity, right?
Yeah.
Or if you've got complex PTSD or something like that, then okay, you know you're working with small capacity. But oftentimes people don't know. And they go into something like even a sound bath. You know, I worked at an addictions treatment center for 2 years before I came out on my own. And you know, these guys couldn't sit through a sound bath. Like, often they were having, like, anxiety attacks and stuff.
Global high, right?
What?
That's a global high. And global high, like, I thought, because of my global high, which means I'm very sympathetic, I thought my capacity was huge. But it was razor thin.
Exactly.
So I'm constantly...
Your ability to override was huge.
I mean, yeah.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Your capacity was really... Same with me.
Yeah.
I could fake it. Oh my God, I was the best faker.
Yeah.
But then once I started realizing like this, this is like, I'm just overriding. And then eventually that catches up. Eventually we have some outburst that's unwarranted, or we have our shutdown, or we have, right, some behaviors. It catches up, right?
The fatigue comes out later. Like, I heard you say that. The fatigue comes out later. It seems like diabetic is the beginning.
Yes.
And then we either, I think there's a couple scenarios of fatigue, right? Where
totally
we come out of the sympathetic and we feel how much we've been running on that treadmill our whole life.
Dude.
Or we are processing a ton of stuff and that's fatiguing. And we can
right.
also be in a collapse.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Look, we could be in a healing process of stuff. Right. Right. And that's not really necessarily collapse. That's just your body's got to go. But that's why it's like fine tuning that somatic intuition, because we know, like, we know, oh, this is like, you know, and again, we might miss it sometimes. Like, if I'm feeling really tired one day, I might be like, what's happening right now? It's, oh, okay. I think this is just me like moving through something that I moved yeah. through, whatever it is. But
is it still freeze if it's fatigue from processing or moving through a healing phase?
Nah, I wouldn't call it.
I kind of say no to that. And the difference is, does the fatigue come with this like apathy and like, I don't want to do anything. So it's like, I'm afraid to move, like kind of situation. Like, I'm in the mud is what I would call that. That's also what it feels like when you're processing like, in the mud, versus like, with the apathy stuff, like I don't want to do anything today.
Yeah.
I want to hide kind of thing.
For me, exactly. For me, the internal conversation is different.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
It's shut down. It's kind of like maybe what I don't really do this much anymore in any scenario, but like, you know, what's wrong kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what we did that. But me and you were talking yesterday. And that's a big shift for us.
Yeah.
Because let's say 6 months ago, we would be trying to figure everything out together.
I mean.
You're like, oh, I've dealt with this for a couple of days. What do you think this is? And we're both like, what do you get when I, that's what we would say. What do you get when you hear that? Maybe it was 8 months ago, but like, we've only known each other for a year. So it had to be 6 months ago. That would be in like November, December. I felt like we did.
I feel like I was already kind of able to know for the most part. But yeah, I mean, I think that it just the conversation around the I tend to not outsource that much. I feel
like. Stop doing that, too. I care less and less about somebody telling me what to do. And that's like yesterday.
Part of me feels like, yeah, part of me would feel like, man, do I need to connect more? But I just don't really share much
mm-hmm.
I just wait. I'm like, oh, okay, just wait it out. You know, something's happening. For me, it's like if it's shut down or if it's healing, it's the same medicine to me. It's just like, oh, my body, it doesn't change what I do necessarily.
Yeah.
If it's a, you know, if I can pinpoint maybe what has happened or what has occurred and I'm like in some of that lower energy stuff. I'm just kind of like, where can I give myself space today? Like, what do I need to do for myself today?
Yeah.
You know, and
it's a question that I've been using is like with the, I think it's Tara Brach. It's like the rain thing. And she's like, recognize, where's it at in your body? And the question is, if you knew this was going to shift and go away eventually, because I think that's a big fear that we have is that this is never going to go away and something's wrong with me. If you can trust that this is going to go away tomorrow, what would you do differently? And so instead of trying to fix it and figure it out, you would attune to it. You'd be like, damn, dude, you're tired. Like, let's rest. You know? Yeah. Instead of like,
man, I don't have any issues with rest anymore, especially now that I know I'm a projector. I'm just like, oh, I need rest. Cool. You know, after every session, I'm out on my grass. I'm on my couch. I'm just closing my eyes. I'm feeling into what's happening. Like, you know, and that gives me, for projectors, like, it definitely gives us more energy when we, the more we rest, you know, like we that's how we build energy. So that actually, that the human design stuff has actually been huge for me.
That's where I'm different than you too. Now I need to absolutely, I need little pauses to connect. So I'm with you on that. Like, I've even thought recently, like, can I do like 45 to 50 minutes of work and then take 10 to 15 minutes to just lay on the floor? And yeah. I also need to be active like crazy. And when I say active, I mean like walking. I probably get in 15,000 steps a day in the sun, try to do barefoot as much as I can. You know, I work out 3 times a week, but I'm doing Qigong, I'm doing Feldenkrais, and I started doing yoga again. And it's just like, how can I work these smaller movements, not like exhausting myself, but like it builds me up.
Interesting. Yeah.
And I need to rest too.
I can't. It's interesting because I've been working out with a trainer again. So I stopped all that a few years ago, try to heal my adrenals and my, you know, my hormones and stuff. And just recently I was like, I have a buddy that's a trainer and I'm like, hey, would you work with my capacity? Because, like, you know, I would love to do just a 30 minute. He wouldn't do a 30 minute, but we're doing 45. And he's like, 30 minutes. I'm like, no, I'm telling you, like, that's all I need. And so, but anyway, we do 45. And I'm like, okay, we have to just, you're going to work with me probably differently than you do anybody else, because I just have to go really, really slow. I have to be paying attention to my breath. My heart rate can't go up too much. And man, we overshot it a little bit on Friday. And what I mean by overshooting it, I mean, we did like, I wish I could give you an example, or I don't know the names of like the things, but like very, it's very little. It's very little, like some squats with some weights, bicep curls, do a little bit of this, but everything's slow. There's not like, you know, we only did 30 minutes actually on Friday. Paying attention to my heart rate, breaks between every single round, right? Break, water, sit. Not like how most people work out. And we overshot it. Like, I didn't sleep. I haven't slept well since then.
Since then.
Like, last night and the night before, I didn't get good sleep. Over the weekend was actually okay. But I know that it's from that, because I know that my cortisol shot up. It's also, like, if I'm on screens more than usual, that can do it. But if I get too much movement, my joints will start, my cortisol shoots.
Cortisol, yeah.
Yeah, because like I get really excited usually when I get that adrenalized feeling. And what I noticed like with him, and we teased this out together, I love him for this, but like when I meet him, I get so excited at the interaction, which is like a good thing, right?
Yeah.
So I get so like, oh my God.
You mean like when you call me? We burned each other out yesterday.
Dude, and I'm like, yeah. And then I'm crashing. If I'm crashing by the afternoon, I know. Oh, it was too much. Like, just be in your own body.
So, well, and that's what I hear, though, is that you really know your own body. I mean, yeah, what I do with my clients, because I'm health coaching still, less now, but it's like, let's find a workout that can support your body, that's not too much, that doesn't cause these things. And to be able to do what you just described of, this is how much I mean, this is where my heart rate needs to be. That's knowing your body and attuning to yourself. And you'll be able to, just like we stretch ourselves in therapy, you stretched yourself this time. And does that mean it's bad? No, that means you did
too much. There we go. Yeah. Exactly.
But next time you go back, just like if we were in a one-on-one session in therapy, we would say, all right, maybe we're going to resource more this time. We're going to slowly introduce you back in, because there may be some fear of those symptoms coming back. So let's work with that. And it's like, the more Dude, you can really take, when you have the nervous system lens, it really, because now I'm listening to my body, I'm attuning to myself, I'm doing what I need, I'm working within my capacity, I'm containing if I need to, I'm resourcing. And it's like, man, the gym becomes a nervous system playground, because now it's like, if I got some anger going, I'm going to the gym after this, and I got some anger from some stuff yesterday, I'm like, can't wait, because I could feel it coming up, and I can just like get into that. I'm like, ah! You know, I can use the voice. I can feel my feet in the ground. I can, instead of, I'm just doing this shit,
right?
Competing with this person, or I'm whatever. It's like, I'm competing with me in the moment. And the competing is to stay with myself. And to, it's like, that's long-term healthy exercise, is listening to our body, working with the activation and even the fatigue if it's there. And if there's fatigue and I'm going into a workout where I'm going to move way slower, I'm going to drop the weights down more, I'm going to be talking to myself the whole time. Where I used to go, I'm going to get this hard workout and you're going to shut the fuck up and we're going to get a bunch of adrenaline going. And now it's like, nah, we're going to do this together. This is going to be safe. It's going to be good. Talk to me. Let me know how you're feeling. And then that's constant capacity building. And that's what we want.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I notice it's interesting, the workout thing. I mean, I can go for a walk, you know, I would love to do some yin. I did some Qigong last week.
Love it.
But for women, it's like, you know, because we're on that 28 to 30-ish day cycle, and you guys are on, like, your energy technically rebuilds every 24 hours. Like, you're on a 24-hour cycle. Ours is not. So it's like, for the ladies that are listening to this podcast,
tell me more about that.
I do not work out during my luteal and my menstrual phases.
So you're saying, like, help me understand the energy. I know on the luteal phase, it's more sensitive. You need carbohydrates, and you got to change the way you eat and move and all.
Our cycles, like, you restore, you rebuild, you restore 24 hours. Right? You have phases in that 24-hour cycle where you might need more rest, you have more energy, you need to, right? Like, all the things, socially engage, like, that all happens in a 24. For us, it's a 28 to 31, 32-day cycle. Wow. So, like, we have weeks, or a week of production, right? Right, like, ovulation phase and the, what's leading up to that ovulation phase? Ovulation and hold on. Anyway, those two phases are when we're most productive. For you, you're productive. You have a phase of production every day, right? From like 11 to 3, probably. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's the middle of the day. You can produce. We can only produce those 2 weeks.
That's harder, like,
not even 2 weeks.
10 to 4.
Those other 2 weeks, we feel like you feel when you're at the end of your day. And we feel like that all day for 2 weeks in those two cycles.
And that's where you guys can die. I used to do this with my health coaching with women, especially if you had like PCOS and endometriosis. And they, you know, we would do more fasting that first week of their cycle and lower carb. And then from there, it's like slowly increasing to where you hit the luteal and then you're blasting carb, basically.
Right.
But what happens with women is they shame themselves of, like, because we have this diet culture that says carbs are bad. And so my wife's body starts to crave carbohydrates, and they're saying, I can't have those. And then what does that do to your cycle? You know, what does that do to your mood and your
whole? Oh my God. It's the follicular phase. That's another when our energy is starting to build to production after.
So if you guys neglect these needs from your body of give me more carbs, give me,
you're overriding.
And instead, that's what happened with women in the keto world, was like, I'm going to eat like a man. Like, I've got a book called,
dude, you cannot. Yeah. Dude.
And it's like, that's why your hair is falling out. That's why you're having your cycle. That's
100%.
And you're gaining weight. And it's like, it's not that you're doing keto wrong. You're doing keto like a man.
Exactly.
And I'd even say
I eat potatoes every single morning. I eat potatoes. Yeah. Either sweet or regular potatoes or a winter squash if it's winter. I get what's local. Yeah. Right. And then a couple of eggs or a little bit of beef sausage every single morning. And then, you know, sometimes I'll eat, you know, another.
Because if you don't do that, your cortisol and adrenaline is going to go up. And like the way that
I do not feel good. And most people, here's the thing. Most people like that feeling of adrenaline and cortisol. They because just know what it's like to not have that.
Because they're in a functional freeze.
Because they're in functional freeze and because of the societal programming. This is really global high.
This is like...
Global. Global. This is the societal global high because it's like everyone is programmed to believe that we should be producing, functioning every single day the same way, you know, and that is not the way. That is not the way.
And when you can listen to your body and wake up and go, what do I need? And give it what it needs instead of not what do I think I need? What do I feel that I need? And like what I can do is I can go, today I'm feeling a little low energy. I'm going to just have meat and fat or protein and fat at breakfast. But if I did that again at lunch, like I know that if I do that at lunchtime, I got to eat a shit ton of carbs. Because
do that if you're low energy.
If I'm low energy, it can give me like a little bit more.
A boost.
A little boost. But if I did that multiple days in a row, or if I...
why are you trying to fix the low energy? That would be my...
It just feels good. I'm not trying to fix it. It's just like today I did that. It's like, you know what? I went to grab a mango and I was like, I don't want it.
You don't like that. There you go. Okay. So that's
it's more I went and cut out. It's like I got so many peaches and mangoes right now and watermelon. And I was like, ugh, I just don't, it just feels better to not have that today. And if I didn't load up on carbs later, I will be snacking at dinner time.
Yeah.
Because now my
exactly. Exactly. So yeah, if I don't eat carbs in the morning, I'm too hungry in the evening. So I try not to eat past 4 or 5 actually.
Yeah.
And then I eat and for women especially, we should eat in the first, like at least the first hour that we're awake. I try to eat in the first 30 minutes I'm awake. Mm-hmm. You know, and I eat the biggest meal of the day. Either breakfast or lunch. Like yesterday, I had a massive ribeye I've been making this gazpacho. It's like tomato. Basically, I'm just drinking my salad. It's really good. It's a lot of tomato and cucumbers and garlic. And
well, that's the season right now.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, all the local stuff. And I wasn't hungry for the rest of the night. And round 7, I had a little snack. So I was like, I don't want to be too hungry when I go to bed. But I mean, it's just, you know, that's really how we should be eating.
And it feels so good for your sleep. Like, I know if I eat later, it's just like sitting on my stomach and it didn't.
It's the perfect balance. It's the perfect balance. Because if you don't eat enough during the day, that will spike cortisol. And I don't sleep. My sleep is better if I've eaten too much than if I've not eaten enough for me.
Oh, yeah. And I like to, like you said, backload. I like to have biggest meal. And something I've been doing a little bit differently, too. I would definitely agree with you on the eat 30 minutes to an hour after waking up for hormones. And I've been and the same thing with this morning, like not eating carbs. I just eat when I'm hungry. And sometimes that'll be 10. It's been with the heat, I guess. It's like I'll go for a walk in the morning. I just don't want to eat. So I'm just drinking water. And I've even had some fasting days where like I won't eat until lunchtime, let's say, or 10 o'clock. I didn't eat till 10 today. Just feels good. And it's all about, I could plan out all this shit and like try to make it a routine. But it's like, nah, I'm just listening to what's happening and feeling into the day. And no matter what it is, if I'm doing that, I think that's what we're talking about. That's what feels good. It's like, yeah. It's so hard to say, this is how I do things, you know, and da, 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 da. It's like, it kind of changes all the time. And I
totally. Yeah. I did have a morning the other day that I didn't want the potatoes and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And so I switched up. Yeah. I mean,
And usually I would be freaking out. What does that mean? I didn't have my potatoes this morning. Like, bro, like, no, just listen to your body. You don't have to gaslight yourself or think the worst possible thing. But we also controlled everything. And so that's a decommissioning. It's like, I don't have to control myself. I can give myself permission to do what feels good in the moment.
Well, we have more space, you know, when you have more regulation, you have more space to just be. You don't have to.
Oh, here's one. So I heard this another day that like it really made me cry so much. And it's talking about the divided mind. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
So the divided mind is I'm trying to make a decision. Okay. And I'm divided because I'm trying to make the right decision.
This is the good segue into what I was going to talk about next.
Perfect. So it's like, that's the problem. There is no such thing as the right decision. And it makes so much sense in an environment that's not safe growing up, because if I don't make the right decision, what happens? My ass is on the line, right? So it's like, when I realize that, I'm like, oh my God, I'm trying to make the perfect decision. So I avoid, and I went down this whole rabbit hole of self-inquiry. I'm trying to make the perfect decision so I avoid being punished, because if I'm being punished, that means I'm bad. And that's like the worst, that's like my core thing that I'm working with right now, of this just like control, 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 perfect, perfect, perfect.
And the irony of it is there's never a wrong decision.
Right. Can we, why don't you?
Never a wrong decision. Literally, we make decisions based on where we are in our evolutionary process in that moment.
And let yourself feel. And bad. You know what? I'm sorry. I forgive. Like, let me try again. That's
exactly.
Like, failure is awesome because it's feedback. It's like, man, getting feedback from Irene in the beginning of the SPT was so fucking scary, because I'm like, oh my God, I suck so bad. Now, in the last thing that we did, I've loved getting feedback, because I'm like, oh yeah, I see that and that, and I can see that in my videos, and like, now I can do better. So that's like, I can learn. And so we can show ourselves.
We don't make it about us being bad anymore. That's uncoupled from your psyche.
Yeah.
Let me give you constructive criticism coupled with that means I'm bad. Like, that's no longer what that means for you. It just means like, oh, you know. But yeah, when we talk about intuitive development, receiving these messages, knowing what your decision is, right? I mean, like, that's what I work with my clients for the most part.
That's how you heal yourself.
It's just, what does it feel? What does your yes feel like? And when I'm working with women, I'm like, think about when you know it's a yes.
Hell yes or no.
Sit with the yes. Like, because it's just, we've been talking about sitting with the discomfort. It's just as important to sitting with the comfort.
Yeah, dude. Yes.
Like, we don't know. What the fuck's the goal here, right? We're just looking for the, right? Is that that's where the resourcing comes in. That's why it's so important. Feel your resource.
Yeah.
Feel when you're resourced, when you're in that contained sense, it's like, what is the feeling? Oh, my heart feels expanded. Like, yeah. That's, what does your yes feel like? You know?
Yeah. We've had so many no's. We're so used to looking for the worst thing. Like, that's why I love like glimpsing, I believe it's called. So you're like glimpsing over to what's good. Like, instead of going like, ah, man, today's, it sucks outside, it's hot and the world's ending. It's like, but like, tree is.
Oh, yeah. Oh God, that old
tree is dope. This leaf here feels good.
Here's the thing. I mean, look, the world is ending and all catastrophe is happening based on our politics. Like, that is literally just a person's perception. And
that's created, manufactured for you to be stressed out. And
yeah, because for a lot of us, that it's the opposite thing. You know, it's what we were talking about yesterday. It's like, my kid is enrolled in this blindfold vision class. Like, and two things to that. The first is, this is part of the practice in the very beginning for these kids, right? Which I've already been working on with my kids. So I think it's like a beautiful, you know, extension to the work that I'm already doing. Is what is that, when you nail it, when you got it right, like, what does that feel like? Just
The hell yes.
Yeah, it feels different, you know, and I've already been talking to my daughter about that. She's going into seventh grade. It's like when you're making big decisions, or you're thinking about boys, right? Or you're having things going come up with your friends and stuff, like you know your yes, because she's a manifesting generator too. So I've been trying to, I don't say it in these words to her, but it's like, there is a holy hell yeah. Actually, I do say those words, but her sacral yes. She's in the sacral yeses, right? But she knows, oh, because the kids get it because they've not been as programmed as us, right?
Yeah.
So like, she's like, I mean, I saw her face go, like she got it, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, I know my yes. You might not always know when it's a no, but you know when it's a yes. Keep feeling your yeses. And then that is how you are directed and where you go in life. Always, that's it, right? So I'm approaching this blindfold vision, and that's like the first step. It's like when they're blindfolded, these kids are blindfolded. This is it for people who are listening that don't have any idea what we're talking about, is that kids can be trained to see blindfolded. And it's a phenomenon that's been happening. There's trainings that are going on. It's 100% success rate with this one particular practitioner. Maybe we can put her in the show notes. Dr. Edith Ubantu, U-B-A-N-T-U. The other thing to this is like, we who are on this, like, you know, for lack of a better term, like spiritual awakening.
Ascension,
a conscious, you know, consciousness, basically journey, like, the shit that is happening in the world right now,
and okay.
We are being realizing what we are capable of as humans.
And you want to pay attention to politics, bro?
Mind blowing. Like, we're like, holy crap, this is ascension. Like, we are in a 5D consciousness, 100%. And the reason why I know that is because when I go back into 3D, when I have to, I'm like, this is like, what is everybody like? I have, you know, other parents of my kids' friends and stuff that are in that world, and they're just like, oh, they're freaking out, and there's the world and this and that, and I'm just like, oh, you're in a different world than me. Like, you're in a different timeline. Like, the consciousness is so totally different. So it's really interesting because, man, I don't think it's doomsday at all. I think we've just fucking entered into like part of what it means to feel bliss.
It's like one of the greatest times to be alive, you know?
Oh my God, 100%. Like, no wonder I came back for this shit, you know?
I went through that, like, I was 3D just a couple of months ago, I felt like.
And just, you were, dude, you're.
What did I say to you, like, when Trump won? I was like, I said, I have.
I'm like, restored my faith in humanity. And I was like,
damn, dude.
Yeah. I was like, that then they did exactly what they wanted to do.
Well, and I think it's like, you look at the globalists and you look at the deep state and the cabal, and it looks like to me that like that is more on the left, and that's the way it's pushed. But the deeper you go into it, it's both sides pulling extremes and shifting culture is more what it is.
Well, they just watch. They watch for who's losing faith, and then they throw that party the bone, but so that they restore faith, which is always a really interesting way that you said that, because I was
so,
like,
so we're gonna bring up the Epstein files. We're gonna do all this. Right. We're gonna get rid of the corruption. We're gonna clean up the swamp.
Trump was the perfect person for them to put into place.
Yeah, and then I say
people are moving up. Yeah. But what's interesting now is that the left is having the exact conversations that the right was having 4 years ago, right? Like, we went on this trip and over spring break, and my kids invited two of their friends and their parents came, and some of the conversations they were having, I just sat back and listened. But they were like, I mean, I've never been considered a conspiracy theorist, but like, now I'm really questioning 9/11, and I'm questioning, you know, all these things. And I'm like, and these are left people. So I'm like,
so it's all great. Waiting.
Interesting. Right. But the problem is they think Trump is the problem. It's like, well, yeah, but he's not he's just a person put there to like speed up whatever this is.
But
right?
Do you not think that it's still. Both sides are, I really like what you're talking about is ping ponging, but it's really just, it's still awakening. It's still getting different people to wake up.
If all this didn't happen, we all wouldn't have woken the fuck up the way we did, right? Yeah. All this had to happen for us to be doing what we're doing, you know, and more people will wake up and some won't. Right. But the whole thing is like what I said to them on the boat was like, they're like, oh, Trump this and Trump that. I'm like, do you guys understand that that wouldn't be happening unless what happened over the last 4 years, like they set it up perfectly. Like when you see it from this this bird's eye view, you're like, oh, man, that was brilliant. It was brilliant for them to do all of this.
Yeah.
So that then they could swing into this, because this actually is pushing us more into that AI and surveillance and all that really fast. And then they'll go back the other way again, you know?
It's like Seth Lyon, Irene's husband, like his book, it's on Medium. It's called The Multiverse, I believe. That's what blew my head open. And it's basically, and this is going to blow a lot of people's heads off, it's like there's a cabal that came to this planet whenever Atlantis was around, where they were trying to make this tree of life that's going to help life on the planet evolve. And this cabal of 12 evil, extremely evolved, intelligent species showed up. And these Atlantean people were basically like, this is what God wants, kind of Buddhist. It's light in the dark. We're just going to let it be here. And this cabal is what has infiltrated itself into our politics, into our entertainment, into everything that we do. And
our food, our water, our everything.
And them keeping us stressed keeps us in our trauma, keeps us out of our higher brain and thinking. And so we're just chasing whatever they're puppeting. And then they put these of like right or left. And it becomes like, I'm a Duke basketball fan. And it's like Duke and Carolina. That's what it feels like. These rivalries.
Exactly.
And the people in the middle, we really kind of want the same themes, but we've been fed into these algorithms of these puppets and they're just doing this shit.
Yeah.
You know? And so I got really excited with Trump coming in and it's like, oh, we're going to up in the deep state and we're going to get the cabal. And it's like, not real. Like now it's like, here's the testing files, but like, yeah, they don't exist. Don't think about it. I'm like, what? Because that exposes it all. And we can't do that.
You know? So, yeah. I mean, I think that's a whole circus in and of itself as well. Like why do we, to me, like we talked about this yesterday, like that is a theater. The whole Epstein files thing. That's just theater. Like it's that happened. And probably every single person I don't know that that's true, but a lot of people are on that list.
Right.
Right. But to me, it's not about the list. I could give two shits about the list. Right. It's like, oh, they're like, yeah, that is happening. That's been happening. That's been happening for thousands of years, probably.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they infiltrate our psyche. That's how they expand that consciousness.
You can see that. You can see.
You care about like.
Yeah.
You get all wrapped up and like, oh, they're gonna do it. They're not gonna do it. No. That's just like feeding.
That's taking you away from your work.
Perfect. Yeah. Like.
And then you're relying on
energy suck
to take care of us. And it's really like, nah, step out. You can laugh at it. It's like, oh yeah, these they're lying to us. They know that we know. We know that they know. We know that they know that we know. And we're still playing this fucking game. And that somebody's going to save me. Nah, put your head down, do your work, and love yourself and love the people around you and change your community.
Yeah, exactly. It's all voluntarism is what the term is for what is happening now, which is like us stepping outside of that system.
It's so smart and orchestrated. And it takes a lot. I think Seth's book is what really cracked my dome, and then the stuff you were telling me about started making sense. I was like, oh, because I found myself getting into one side or other and getting mad. I would be in traffic and somebody in a Prius would cut me off and I'd be like, fucking liberal, you know? And I'm like, is that how I want to be? Is that who I want to be? Is like hating someone? And I'm like, nah, dude, I love everybody. I'm trying to be more accepting of myself and other people. And I can't be paying attention to this politic bullshit.
The media makes us hate each other.
Hate each other.
Oh, It's crazy.
It
is crazy. Years ago. Yeah, I was in it too a few years ago. It's you know, getting so frustrated at my kid's school for the this. I mean, and it's just like, how
dare they? I remember those comments.
Right, everything. I don't think that they should be in, you know, sending emails for the parents to encourage their children to go to Pride.
Or to get on hormone blockers. That's a big problem.
Well, they don't, I don't think they encourage that at the school, but I don't know because I don't have kids that have that issue.
So, well, like the law that just said, you know, they made it to where if parents, and correct me if I'm wrong, if parents asked about, like if a kid wanted gender care or whatever you call that, and they, something about it, the parents went to therapy to talk about it, like they would be sent to child protective services, child custody stuff, because it's like.
Because you're denying the child's right to.
Yeah. No. What?
I don't know that that's true, right? You have to look these things up yourself. Oftentimes, that's
propaganda. That's propaganda to get you.
Propaganda. Right? Exactly. Yeah. You don't know that that's true, but.
But it's so easy to suck you in with these little fucking things.
Exactly.
You're like, oh my God, I did what?
Most of the liberals that I know have a pretty solid, reasonable perspective on that topic. But if you look at the news and the media, and now there are extremists that are definitely pushing for these types of things, in my opinion, obviously, like children should not be changing their gender at all, at least until 25. That should not happen just because we can be confused and there's all kinds of.
And you told me this too. We can be, no, somebody else. I think Magda told me this. She said, what if they're living like a past, remembering a past life?
Well, that's true. Yeah. I mean, and there's also like, there's also just the hormone disruptors and all the stuff in our water.
Virgin, gray point, astidine and flora and all this bullshit that's in, you can't get clean water.
Yeah. So it's just like, exactly. So it's just like, there's a lot of factors, but I mean.
And when have we ever had clean water in human civilization, like human history? How often?
Well, we haven't had prescription, traces of prescriptions.
Birth control. Yeah.
But of course, I have a friend who has a niece who is, since she was born-ish, or like, you know, and also there's a vaccine issue with this too, because there's, you know, like, you have a boy and they're injected with DNA of a female.
Yeah.
75 times, which is what the, you know, the schedule basically is, then that's gonna, does that have an effect? Like, have we studied that, right? But so this little girl was presenting like a boy ever since she was very little. My this is one of my best friends. She says that ever since she can remember, she was just boy. Like, she was just always, right? And so, like, she became, I don't know how old she is now, but I think she's in her 20s and started, like, transitioning or whatever. I don't know that she's had any kind of surgery, but I do think she takes hormones. But my friend is, like, he just wants to be, it's a he now, he just wants to be left alone, you know? Like, he just wants to live his life as a man. He's not out protesting. He's not talking to children. He's not trying to... He just literally wants to live his life as a man because he feels like he's always been a man. Like, that's how he thinks of himself. And he just wants to be left alone. And, like, this whole ID thing was, like, hard for him because their family lives in Italy. And, you know, I guess his ID said male. And now the Trump administration says that, but now it's confusing when he tries to travel because now his ID says he's a female, right? So it's like in situations like that, you know, that's really hard. You know, this is a really peaceful, sweet, I've met this person, like, so sweet. Again, just wants to live his life.
So there's context with everything.
There's context. There's like, and there's, we have to have compassion. Now, if there's abuse involved, and I've seen that, you know, in pedophilia and these types of things, then yeah, of course
it's just, it's not nuanced. Like, there's so much. It's a.
There's often trauma. Let's just say what it is. Like, there's often trauma. There's often sexual abuse. There's a reason why somebody cannot connect with their biology or is terrified of their biology. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked with a trans girl, and she said I was abused, and ever since then, it doesn't feel safe to me to be a woman. I don't want to be a woman. I need to be strong like a man so I can fight for myself.
Okay.
And what if...
why aren't we having these conversations? You know, why...
Well, I have the conversation that kind of... So let me ask you this.
Well, we are, but like, why isn't this being talked about? Because people are scared. People are scared.
In that type of situation with someone who is abused and they work on themselves, their trauma, does that shift that? I mean, we don't know. But is that
actually possible? I think it is possible. Like in German New Medicine, it's a constellation that happens. The constellations we all have constellations. This is when both sides of the brain have been affected by trauma. And we've seen in CAT scans, as we've looked at these types of things, practitioners who are way more involved in this science than I am, but mm-hmm. that has been done. Where the degree of the constellation has gone down. So how that shows up in your life and the like symptoms around it, which is usually behavioral, goes way, way down. Hmm. I mean, think about what has happened for you in terms of...
I was just thinking about, I watched...
Like, I'm way more feminine. I'm way more like...
Masculine here, more masculine for me too. Remember that?
Yeah, I mean, think about how all of these subtle ways that like my voice has changed, right? My voice
is deeper, yeah.
Yeah, so all these ways once the bracing stops and, right? I mean, with our bit of like Feldenkraisian teachings with Irene, it's like all the ways that the body's holding that survival stress. Once all that starts to open up, I mean, think about for a woman, those hips start to open up. It's safer for her to drop in that womb, right? Where she's safer to be connected to her womb, to her cycles. That all happens through regulation and embodiment. So, yeah, I mean, I think that can change, you know? The goal is not ever to fix again.
Right. There you go. I was about to say that. It's not to change and fix. It's to go back to who you really are.
Right. But it's also just being in the process and seeing what happens, right? It's like, well, if I had some sort of identity issue, let's say I've had many identity crises, right? But it's not shown up for me in terms of gender. Yeah. But if it did, and I, you know, where I am in this work, it would just be like, let me see how it unfolds. You know, the goal is not for me to try to be a man or a woman or like be anxious about that. It's just like, oh,
it's me.
I'm open. I'm open to like allowing this to unfold and see what happens. And I'm okay to change. That's the thing is there's an identification that's happened. So there becomes fear around, well, what if I'm not? Like, dare I say, like, what, I mean, cancel culture stuff is coming up for me right now. But like, what if someone was like, oh, I'm actually not gay anymore? Like, would their groups accept them? You know, we make these things that are so clinging to our identity and our groups and what we believe in. And it has to be this way that like, there's no freedom to just, you know what? That's not me anymore.
Well, that's what trauma is. A trauma takes us away from ourselves, and we take on all these.
Well, we have to identify with a group because we have to fit in because that wolf mentality, that pack mentality. And if that's our pack and we're doing something to separate ourselves from that pack, that is terrifying for someone who hasn't worked through their trauma.
And performing like that, like always having to be a wolf pack, like, damn, that sounds pretty fatiguing. Right. So it's what we're talking about. Of course you're tired. You're actually cheating, dude, and you've been pretending to be a wolf. That's me. I was such a hard ass, such a mean in sports. I was a mean person. And I thought that was so cool. And I realized now I was hurting other kids because I was hurting.
Yeah.
And that's what made me likable, because if you can't touch me or hurt me and you're afraid that I'm going to hurt you, well, now I had the control.
Mm.
And now I'm cool. I'm not possible to be. I'm processing this out loud right now. It's like, oh, you can't hurt me and you can, you gotta lie to me because I'll hurt you. And it's like, no, I'm just doing, here it is. I'm just doing what was done to me.
Yeah.
I'm treating myself. That's the motherfucker in this work is how we were treated. We're gonna treat ourselves like that. And that's usually unconscious. And we're going to project that out into the world as well. And we're going to call these patterns me that are really controlling so I can feel safe. And I'm going to people please and I'm going to be perfect. And I'm going to intellectualize and I'm going to do these things. And I'm going to change this. I'm going to change that. I'm going to change. I'm going to be addicted to change. And the this work is unwinding back and going, you know what? Like, that ain't me. And that takes a lot of courage and compassion to see that and to grieve that and to accept the part of you that we buried so long ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's probably a good place to wrap up.
I was just going to say, I think I'm at my max conversation.
I'm glad that we're doing this thing now where
I can feel my eyes getting kind of glassy. Like I can feel myself kind of starting to zone out a little bit. Yeah.
We did that last night too, where you're like, hey, I'm getting real activated this conversation. I was like, me too. I got to go. I was like,
I'm like, this is it. This is it.
Selden, where can we find you online?
So right now, my website is Selden Integrative Healing, but that's about to change. You can find me on Instagram at Somatic Intuitive. So all my links are there in case my website does change or it is going to change in the next couple months. So I'm somatic_intuitive on Instagram. And that's it.
Cool. Definitely hit up. I almost called you Irene Selden. And for mine is Mitch Webb. I'm K Mitch Webb on Instagram, MitchWebb.com. And I also throw this out there since we're going to be sharing this on both platforms.
Oh, yeah.
What do you guys think about the combo? Like we've talked about doing a podcast. Like you guys want to hear more of this, more guest time? Do we need to do a little thing together? Whatever. But tuning in, this has been a lot of fun. Any last words?
No, I think just everybody, if for people who are here, I'm assuming they're probably on their healing journey or they're doing their work. So my only words are just keep going.
Yeah. Know? Make it a lifestyle, dude.
Like,
100%. Just make it like eating good food. It's just what we do.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much, Selden. I appreciate you.
Yeah. All right. Bye.